192.617, and you notice, and I think it's what, 42 words? I don't remember counting, but I think it's about 42 words. Be very careful. I have a boss that when I write my letters, I write a letter to Nathan after my evaluation. I write and draft a letter for my boss to send to the chairman of your utilities commission, right? Public Utilities Commission. I get mixed up because all those commissions out there have different names. Public Safety Commissions, Public Service Commissions, Public Utilities Commission, Utility Regulatory Board, State Fire Marshals, who knows what am I doing? So Public Utilities Commission. So the chairman gets a letter from my boss. And before my letters go out, my letter that goes out to Nathan, my boss reads it, and he actually goes through it. I think he diagrams every sentence to say, okay, now this is the noun. This is an adjective to the noun here, and now we got the verb here that this noun is doing. And then we got a preposition phrase over here. And this is an adjective to this verb. And then he'll go through it and say, no, I don't like that. And he'll scratch it all out. And he'll make some suggestions. It comes back to me, and I write it up. And sometimes it takes 4, 5, 6 times, and I think he actually goes through every sentence. So we're going to go through this sentence. Maybe not as deep. But what I'm going to do with this is a noun, the operator. And what should they do? They shall establish procedures. I'm going to take the sentence from the first comma here, and I'm going to take a look at that. I'm going to go down to the last comma here, and I'm going to take that out because I think that that tends to just explain stuff in there. It does not really change the meaning of the sentence. So I'm going to take it out, and I'm going to break it down to two sentences. I'm going to take it out, and I'm going to break it. Whoa, where's my app? Yes, I didn't get it in there. Each operator shall establish procedures for analyzing accidents and failures. And I'm going to put a period in there, and I'm going to say the purpose is to determine the causes of the failure and minimize the possibility of recurrence. Pretty simple. I think I went from 47 words down to about, 27 words. So what does it say that you have to do? You have to investigate accidents and failures. And you notice it also, I also wrote there, it does not limit this to incidents as reported under 191.5. Get back here, and I want to pull up that one more time, 617. And of course, you establish the procedures, and if you go back to 605, when it says that there will be procedures required by this part, meaning 192, and that the and that will be in their operation and maintenance manual. And then it also alludes and it says that the operator must follow their procedures. So you have to establish the procedures and you must follow the procedures to investigate. And you notice the word incident is not in the paragraph at all. Accidents and failures are somewhat synonymous. meaning that something has happened that you didn't expect happen, something has happened that you didn't want happen, something happened that is detrimental, and you have to do something to bring it back to normal operations. In my opinion, I think this is, each leak is a failure. That means that you've got gas inside of that round cylinder and it now got out and you didn't want it on the outside. So if something failed, now what must you do is you must make that determination as to the cause of the failure and how to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So let's stay with just leaks this time. And I'll tell you how all the regulations interact. So that means now every one of the leaks that you put on your annual report, you should have looked at and said, this is what caused the leak, and this is how I'm going to prevent recurrence. Doesn't have to be a long report. It may be a leak repair card, and you say, this is the cause of the leak, corrosion. Explain it. And then you have to say, this is what we're going to do to prevent further leaks from that corrosion. It may not have to be done at the same time you repair it, but it has to be explained what you're going to have to do. Review cathodic protection records and ensure adequate cathodic protection on this pipe segment. However, how many people are actually doing that? Not very many. I go in there and I look at leak reports, I look at leak cards, and nobody says, this is what we're going to do. Some of them don't even know. You know, they'll say, this is what happened to the leak. Packing around valve, leaking. Cause, unknown. I'm saying, wait a minute. Why? You have a failure of equipment there. The packing failed. Shouldn't it go into a category somewhere in that list in there as to where that leak came from? And then you try to say something about how you're going to prevent reoccurrence. Check packing on valves as available. Check tightness of packing nuts, maybe. But you have something in there that you're always looking at.
Couldn't we just find that as not being a leak?
No, it was a failure of the packing. In this case, the leak was a failure of the packing. It was not, could not be eliminated by tightening. The next one may be to prevent reoccurrence. To prevent reoccurrence may tighten if necessary. To check tightness of packing on similar valves. You see what I'm saying? The first portion of it is you're eliminating the leak. The second portion of it is to prevent reoccurrence on other parts of it. So you have to investigate, make your analysis, and make a record, and you must document it. Because if you don't do the paperwork, it's not being done. This will be something that is going to be, I think, a priority in DIMM. You must analyze what's happening to your pipeline and what is causing your failures and accidents on your pipeline closer so that you can take the active portion of it. I hate the word proactive because that you take the active portion of it and try to prevent it more. Try to prevent it more. We're trying to prevent dig-ins through one culvert. We're trying to prevent damage from outside forces by maybe making better barriers. We're trying to prevent packing valve failures. We're trying to prevent, you know, you have to do a whole bunch of things, and we're trying to prevent it. The DIMM portion of it is probability versus consequence gives you the risk. got to find out what the probability of those are going to happen. What's the probability of that packing failure on a bunch of other valves? Until you start documenting them and start tracking them out, you really don't know. You say, oh, I think maybe we had some problems with those over the last 5 years, but your numbers don't mean a thing unless you document them and then you analyze them and pull them out. Do we have to make it hard? No, let's not make it hard, but at least put down, every prudent professional puts down their opinion or their analysis. Now it becomes to analysis as a prudent professional saying, I think that this could be stopped or prevented by doing this. And you start trying to work that track out. Everybody's a prudent professional, even the leak detection person out there. If you had a leak, you're out and you were called to a leak call. Who does leak calls here? Anybody know a leak call? Little scenario. You go out and you have a leak call and you cannot find that leak. Have you made a conclusion? What?
It was a dead cow.
Okay. You know that to be a fact?
Yep.
Or basically? How long would you stay there if you didn't find a dead cow? How long would you stay there and work it? I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I'm just trying to say, give me an idea.
Would you go? Long enough to determine whether there was an accident there,
right,
coming from your facility
or not. You'd use your prudent determination of which other people that are similar to you with training and experience would stay there about that long and would look for it. Might be sewer gas, might be residual in the residue of the soil, maybe landfill gas, or it may be your gas. Program manager and I, a couple years ago, I evaluated him, and on Friday morning, I met him for a breakfast meeting because I give him my exit briefing over breakfast, and I grab a plane about 10 or 10:30, and I leave where I'm at, and I come back home, and we're with Bob Evans, and having breakfast, and I'm showing him the stuff, and right, finishing up my report, and sometime when we got through, we were walking out, and here comes this little waitress out there, and she's pregnant, and she says, I smell gas. And manager was there, and he says, well, what do you think it's at? She says, I don't know. She says, I don't even know what's gas. You know, it's like, you know, I'm pregnant, and I smell a lot of things now. And he said, well, you know, and so we're, so the this guy and I were standing there, and he kind of walks away a little bit, checking things out, and we walked up to her, and we said, you know, he's a state pipeline safety manager, and I'm a federal inspector, we do gas pipeline, and she goes, you're kidding me. I said, do you really smell gas? And she said, well, I don't know. I said, well, do you think you might smell it? She says, yeah. And so we said, okay, we're going to call the gas company. And so this is a great time to evaluate the gas company. The guy calls the gas company. He doesn't tell him who he is. Just says, we're Bob Evans. We smell gas. Think there's gas there. We're inside the building. So in the meantime, we go outside the building to the meter set. And the guy says, yeah, I smell gas. And he says, of course, I'm pretty sensitive, and I can smell gas pretty quickly. And I said, well, I'm not quite as good. But I walked around a little bit, and I said, yeah, there's gas in the leak here. And so about 15 minutes later, the van pulls up. The guy pulls out. We watched him. Sure, he does everything just like he should. There's the machine, goes over, and he starts checking it. And he goes up, and he goes around. And he goes over. Nothing hits. He goes around. And then he goes back around this way, and he says, you know, I don't think there's a leak here. This guy says, there's a leak here. There's a leak here. He says, it's somewhere right in here. And he said, no, I think there's some sewer gas over here. And he goes around. Pretty soon, he said, I don't know. I don't think there's a leak here. So the guy gets down there that I'm with, and he smells it. He says, it's leaking right there is a seep. And the guy goes, and he puts it right up there, and boom. Big hit. Well, not a big deal, but he hit. And the guy says, okay, we'll look at it, classify it, and do it. By that time, I said, well, let's go. Things were kind of winding down. And they did find a pilot light on a stove inside that was probably giving her a little smell. And she was real sensitive to it. They'd relit that. But there was this leak in there. So the guy turns to me and he said, did this guy, was he going to blow us off because he couldn't find a leak like that? Was he going to just say, no leak and go away like that? And I said, yeah, I really think so. The guy says, I think so too. So he called the gas company, told them what it was. The guy, of course, you know what happened. He has to go to requalification immediately, or he's pulled from further duties under that job task, and has to go to requalification before he gets on there. And that's where the prudent professional was. He wasn't really, in my opinion, prudent in saying that, you know, we're standing there saying, we can smell gas here. And he keeps saying, no, there's no gas. He should have at least kept checking until we left, but didn't really want to do that. So, anyhow, the guy said, did I do it wrong? And I said, no, I think you did it right. Because, number one, the guy, yeah, he gets a little hit and he's embarrassed. But by the end of the day, probably every person, every technician, well, not everyone, but almost every technician who was at work out of wherever he worked from, probably heard that John got pulled because he didn't find the leak. Inspector standing, just so happened to be an inspector standing there. And the next guy is saying, maybe I'll be a little more prudent, a little more careful about what I do when I'm out there, because you never know, who might be looking over my shoulder. And so, anyhow, this is a digress from a little bit about the leak. You have immediate access to equipment. Equipment that you need to determine maybe a gas leak. I use the example. How many people have almost immediate access to a gas chromatograph? Pretty close, right? You have one in your company, right? And you know, within hours, get you a sample down there and they can take a look at it. Now, how many people here could access somebody or know a contractor or a consultant that has access to you? You have it, so it's pretty close there. What's that?
They've been away
48 hour test. 48 hour test? Can you get it back quicker if you have to? Remember that line that I was telling you about that had a hole about that big around underneath the railroad track? This happened to a municipal, and they have about 10,000 service lines. And they called me up, and I was in Nebraska at that time. They called me up, and they said, we're doing a leak survey, and we have went through there, and we cannot find a pattern. It's down by the railroad tracks, have a lot of concrete. We cannot find a pattern, but we're still getting hits. We don't know what to do. We think there's a leak, but we can't pinpoint it, and we don't know where to go from there. And then they said, I don't think it's our gas. I don't think it is our gas because there happens to be a 10,000-gallon hexane tank there that was for a processing plant right there. And they said, we think there's some leakage out of that hexane tank getting into the soil. We're picking it up and doing it. And I said, what are you going to do? And he said, well, I don't know. What do you think? And I said, well, the first thing I would do is I would get a sample of gas, get it to a gas chromatograph, somebody who has it, and find out if that's your gas or not. And he said, who didn't do that? And I gave him a name. And I said, do you have a working relationship with this operator? And they said, yes. And he said, what about, how do we do anything? And I said, you just call them. And if you can get them, they'll come down, see if they'll come down and take a sample. Get as immediate reply back as possible. And they did, and they pulled it out, and they said, yep, it is natural gas, got ethane in it, standard sample of natural gas. And the guy said, we now know that we've got a leak somewhere. And they started digging, and they started tearing up concrete, and they got in, and they isolated this section under the railroad, and close to the railroad, and they put a barge compressor on there, and they couldn't get more than about 20 or 30 pounds of pressure into the line. And so they knew they had a big problem. So they, I think, in my opinion, came that close to having an explosion. There's other information in there that they didn't know at that time. It happened to be close to a grain elevator, and there was a scales there across the tracks. And about a few days before that, there was some guy that was welding on. There's a manhole covered underneath the scales where you crawl in underneath there. But some guy had some stuff up there, and he was welding some stuff on there, and all of a sudden, poof! And the manhole cover flew up about this high off of there because it was natural gas that was in there. And nobody told them that. And they didn't know that. If they hadn't been prudent professionals trying to find out what is the problem out there that could have led to something else. This is the same town that about 35 years ago also had a natural gas leak to the hotel, blew up a hotel, and I think killed seven people. So they were a little more leery and, in a sense, trying to be a little more prudent. How does the inspector know when an operator isn't doing the requirements of 617? Exactly what I've said before. Probably has a high percentage of other or unknown leaks in Part C of the annual report. I go out. I go with Nathan, and I look at his records on evaluation, and there'll be one day a field evaluation with one of his inspectors or with him or who's ever out there. In his case, last year was him, but in other states there'll be an inspector. And one of the things that I always ask is, what about the other and unknown things on there? And I start looking at them. So this is a place to start it. The second place you go to, you start looking at their repair cards, their work order cards, and seeing what they're doing. 617, you must have some procedures in there. It says it right in the book. If you don't have those procedures, it's a non-compliance. You need to document what you replaced, repaired. You need a list of people and companies that to assist you. A place that got a gas chromatograph. If you really needed it, could you give them a call and probably get a 12-hour turnaround? Possibly. Maybe. You never asked. You never had the problem before. But there's a chance you possibly could. Because in some cases, it may be that dire a situation that you need to know. You don't want to tear up a whole block of concrete when there may be other sources out there. But you need to find out exactly where it's at. You may also want to get other people who have materials in that area in there. They probably should have talked to the operator or the company that had the hexane tank, and they may have, but they were continually working on finding out where that gas was, if it was their gas. And once you do all this stuff, and you got the repairs, you got to know what trending it is. Because if you have a bad type of valve, then the valves like that should be gotten replaced sometime or being inspected more often. Don't go out there and spend all your time doing regulators when the valves are your real problems. That's the reason why if you know what's going on, what's causing your leaks, that's how you do it in the 617 value or investigation. You know where to put your money. Stick your money where the problem is. Looks at work orders. He looks at repairs and replacement of pipe components. And is there an explanation of why that component was replaced? You don't replace a regulator out there simply because you want to. You replace the regulator because it's not functioning right, or it's leaking, or it's doing something. It's, in simple terms, failing, or potentially failing. Comments on this? Yes.
How much of an effort, like on that underneath railroad track, how much of effort is expected to get that pipe out of there for examination? You just board next to it?
Reasonable.
reasonable.
In this case, they didn't take the pipe out, but they looked inside and thought that rock impingement was what it was. You do a reasonable effort, and I don't want to say, you know, you explain. I looked inside. We think we saw rock impingement with some push-in, and we estimated it to be this size because of the air compressor, of how much we couldn't get it up to. And I think that you're making a prudent judgment. That's what you have to do. Do we spend the shall we spend all of our money trying to get that out and find out why? No. Let's put a reasonable amount of money to that. Let's go back to the one on annual reports. Okay, let's slide down a little bit here.
Wait a minute. Yeah, there it is. Let's click right there on that one to start.
Go back one. That's an overpass over an interstate in Kansas. These are just some pictures I think are interesting. This doesn't pertain to a pipeline, but it could have been a pipeline or doing. That's what it looked like on top. Go to the next one. This is what was underneath. Yep. Give it one more. What happened was that you can see that the semi there had the backhoe on it, and it was going from right to left, and the boom was up too much. And evidently it caught right in there, and it just punched its way through. You notice how it flattened the trailer down, pulled the boom all the way back from here to here. Basically, I would say ruined the trailer, ruined the backhoe. I don't know what happened to the driver, but I'll bet you that he's still driving his truck without a fifth wheel attached to it, because he says, I ain't ever going back there again. Yeah, Stacy. Brand new school edition in Wichita, Kansas. Never had a student in it. This leak wasn't on jurisdictional piping, it was customer piping. Here's a classic example. They were working on it, I think it was the day before Thanksgiving. And the contractor was going to test the customer piping inside, the piping inside the building. He turned on the gas. There was a section that wasn't capped off, or maybe several sections of it wasn't capped off. This is what happened. Don't think anybody was hurt, and there was no fire, but just the explosion. Go ahead. This is the house across the street.
Yes.
This one was one I went to. This is when we drove up to it. This is what it looked like. 36-inch pipeline, approximately, I don't know, what is that, about 12 foot deep. And that was a compression explosion. No fire involved whatsoever. This is the piece of pipe that came out of the ground, and that's where it landed. It wasn't pulled anywhere. I measured it out. I think it's probably weighs about 11,000 pounds. Probably was flying like a lame duck when it came out there. It happened about 5:30 in the morning. And the cause of this one, I think, probably is stress crack corrosion. This is the hole right here, the scenario view. The wind was blowing from this direction across to from here to here. This darkness that you see all the way around here, that's soil. This is a liquid tank. What I understand in this one was that all the scaffolding around here, they were painting the tank, the top vent. They didn't want to get paint all over it. They didn't want to have any problems with it, so they put a garbage bag over the top of it. Sometime, I think, maybe during the night, they started pumping the product out of it, and it just sucked it in. And then we have some safety things. Safety is not just what you do. Safety is how you think. This, as I know, is just a practice, but why is he standing there in a practice of it? A loader bucket here on a tractor and a ladder. Now, I've done this before. This is really great. I mean, this is pretty stable here. But if you take a real close look, there's two guys up there. Now, I've done that before. You know, I mean, not necessarily that steep or that high or stuff. But I put a ladder in a bucket, and it really gives you a nice stable platform. The tractor's level, and you do that. But anyhow, that's... This looks like a ball sometimes. But this was sent to me by one of my co-workers, and she said the title of this presentation is Why Women Live Longer Than Men. Aluminum ladder in water, electric drill hanging down there, drilling up there, but he is safe. He's got his goggles on. I'm not sure about this one. And the last one there. And I'm not sure, but I think he might be welding on the fuel tank. Anyhow, sometimes safety is not just what you do, it's what you think and how you act. So when things do go wrong, find out what's wrong and try to prevent them in the future. And I think this will be a little higher priority on the inspection lists from the states, because I think it's going to be a higher priority from the feds to the states and saying you need to do that. The annual reports, accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. Please, they're getting at the end. One of the requirements for the states now for their evaluation is that they must review your annual reports and your incident reports and talk to you if they think there's any problems with them. They need to do that. That's part of their evaluation. If they don't do that, because it's our report, we're saying that it's better for Nathan and his inspectors to come down and talk to you than you can have some federal guy call you up and say, duh, I don't understand this. Why don't you correct it? And you don't know who he is, and you're wondering why he wants to know all this stuff. But Nathan and his inspectors will talk to you about that. And if they think there's things, we're going to ask it, and we're going to say, can you explain some of these things on that? So please work those annual reports. Get them accurate, and you need to know what those leaks are, because 617 says you are. So, you know, basically in a sense, Nathan's going to hit you up and say, you've got a violation because you didn't do a 617 investigation adequately. And then we come down and we're saying, giving us wrong information on your annual report. So you're, in a sense, just building up violation after violation. We're just saying, please help us out and do what's right. Any questions? Yes.
Can you talk a little bit? I think there's been some confusion on incidents.
Can you talk a little bit? I think there's been some confusion on some incidents about what our role is when we come in and do our incident investigation. I think on the operator's part, there's been a little bit of confusion on what we're responsible for, and even on our part, too, for an actual incident. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. An incident on a pipeline, you are required to find out what the cause of the incident is. 617 tells you that. Absolutely. The inspectors from us and from the South Dakota or from the states, they have two missions. Number one, they need to go out to find and see if they can find any probable violations that the operator has done, and to find out and make any recommendations to prevent reoccurrence. Now, in order to find out if you've done an adequate investigation to find out if there's any probable violations and to make a recommendation as to do a reoccurrence, they must have a rudimentary knowledge of root cause of that incident. And state inspectors are now going to do a one-week-long class over the next few years called Root Cause Analysis. It's very intensive. I went to it, and we had to go through charts. We had to find out, and we had to look at all probabilities, and it was very interesting. Very interesting. It's a process to go through our what we think is a good process for root cause analysis. So they are actually there for the thing is probable violations, make a recommendation for from reoccurrence. However, they have to know root cause basis and to see if you're doing your root cause analysis correctly and making a recommendation. And if you're making your recommendations or making your decisions to prevent reoccurrence. That's what the state does. That's what we do. Any questions on that? Go ahead, Stacey.
So the operator's going to find the root cause. And we're going to oversee to see if we agree with that analysis?
Yeah, if they've used an adequate process.
Okay.
And do you have to say that is the absolute, you say that I agree with it because I think their process is right, I think they've worked their process correctly, and that they have come to a logical conclusion. If you don't believe in that, then you talk to the operator and say, tell me why you didn't do an adequate 617, in my opinion. I don't think you did an adequate 617 analysis, an adequate 617 investigation through a process. And therefore, you may be in probable violation. That's the reason why. They have to have enough knowledge about how those processes work or else they can't say you're doing it wrong. Questions? Comments? Yes?
You were talking about doing testing of gas in that one scenario.
Yes. Testing of gas in the scenario.
Right. There's an organization in almost every state now called the CSD, a civil support team. It's a National Guard organization that's specifically out there to respond to hazmat incidents. And they're a very unique organization, and they have the capabilities to do that, and they are available through your county emergency managers. Only when there's a threat to human life would they be available. But so if you're looking at a deal where you have leaking gas that's going to cause death and mayhem in your communities, they would be able to come out and support and do that testing on site. And anywhere in South Dakota, they're available within 5 hours.
Good, good. Now, can they distinguish between natural gas and other
gas?
Gas chromatograph.
Yeah, they have one in their mobile unit.
Okay. So when it gets down to that, and in this case, the scenario that I said was, we think, was serious enough that they probably could have been convinced to come out in this case. Now, other ones, you know, that's a little different story.
Yeah, and I mean, but that's something to discuss with your county emergency management and your emergency responders, your law enforcement, your county emergency management personnel. So if you have a threat to a community where people are going to, you know, where buildings and homes are going to go up, if obviously you're out in the middle of nowhere, that's a different scenario. But they're owned by the governor of the state for those. And there's a process that they can be anywhere on site in South Dakota in 5 hours. There is a unit in North Dakota, Montana as well. So
Nathan, you know about that?
No, that was news to me.
Good. You want to kind of follow up just for your knowledge and assistance?
I have the commander's right here in Rapid City, and I have his name. Obviously, he works for the governor. You do too. Somebody to know.
Sounds good. Thank you very much. I appreciate you sharing that knowledge. So, any other comments? No. Good comments like that are definitely welcome. Bad comments aren't so welcome, but we'll take them. Looks like MDU is being very generous with us again. So, thank you very much. 15 minutes, approximately. You want them back in here?
Yep.
Take a break. Thank you.
Okay, I think it's 50.